Welcome to Helpful Social Work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity so that people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jo. Welcome to this podcast. This is part one of our six podcasts for series two. We've now had, Jerry, we've had 5,000 downloads of our podcasts, which I think is fantastic. Yeah. We're thinking of ways to celebrate. And one of the things that I'd like to think about for series three is social work around the world. I think that would be a good topic.
Yeah, we're definitely looking ahead to what we might do next. And as well as thinking about different countries, I'd be interested in thinking about different disciplines. So we could do each month, say, a podcast on social work in a particular country, and then social work and, I don't know, journalism, or social work and economics, social work and philosophy.
Social work in the legal profession.
That would be really interesting.
Yeah. So maybe people could let us know what they think about those ideas.
Yeah, so you can contact us through our website, which is www.helpfulsocialwork.com, or on iTunes. You can leave us a review there. Yeah, so just to kind of say a little bit about where we've got to, we are just over midway through series two, and been really pleased with the number of downloads that we've had, and across different countries as well. So about half from Europe. Mm. Many from the UK, but different countries as well. Quite a lot from America and Australia, Japan. So that's quite exciting. I was thinking about what my favourite podcast has been so far, and the most popular one was the last one that we did. Recent one that we did from series two, which was 4B, and that was on regulation. I wouldn't have expected that necessarily to be the most popular.
We had an interesting debate then, didn't we, about whether we thought regulation was something that was good or had unintended consequences, didn't we? And I thought that was interesting.
And actually someone on Twitter described that as, "I've just listened to a very polite row about regulation."
I think that's fair to say, because there are times when we have strongly held views.
We disagree, absolutely. But through relationship,
absolutely. Well, I loved the one we talked about where we were trying to talk about what defines social work, and you came up with that idea of us as specialist generalists.
Yeah, which I nicked from GPs.
I love it. Yeah. I still now, when I try to describe social work to people, I say we are specialist generalists. Mm. And to me that just so fits with the eclectic nature, but the specific usefulness of us. I think it's great. Yeah.
And I think our topics and our delivery and our sound quality has got loads better over series two, because we've been helped out by Kevin at Alba Digital Media.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, he's awesome. In series one, they're probably my two favourite podcasts, which are the one on integrity that we did right at the start, and also the one on social work stories, because that idea of how we tell the story of our profession and what we're trying to do, and how we debunk myths about it.
Yes.
It's just been really useful for me.
And something we need to keep revisiting, actually, because we as a profession need to continue to get better and better at how we talk about social work and what we do and the types of stories we collect, and those are real purposeful stories.
Yeah, it was interesting today because we were working together and we were simultaneously, well, not quite at the same time, but during the same day by the same group of people, we were told that social work needed to have more stories and more celebration. And when we asked people to tell us their stories of good practice, they were really silent.
I think
it's very difficult for people to break that tradition of modesty, maybe.
Is that a tradition? But we got three really good stories, didn't we? And for me, the interesting thing about about all three stories was how they all focused on relationship in different ways.
Yeah, so the impact happened through spending time, getting to know someone and building the relationship. Yeah.
So through series one and two, we've gradually talked about ourselves as social workers, our relationships with colleagues, and then our organisation, then our relationship with other agencies. And we're now going to move out further into the wider context of social work. We've touched on some of this in our podcasts, for example, the one on regulation, on austerity, and we'll start by looking at the social and economic context of social work. Social work is at the margins of society. It's work with people who would otherwise lack resources to manage, maintain, or restore their lives. The role is sanctioned, it's agreed, and it's voted for by the public. So what social work does and how it does it is greatly affected by the public context. Mm. And it's not just about the difference that our work makes on a micro scale, day to day, in the lives of people that we and our colleagues work with. It's also about the difference that our work makes to the wider society that we live in. And I thought it was interesting this morning, once again, in the work we did, people easily identified the difference that good social work can make to healthy communities. I thought that was really heartening. You know, social workers really have to be aware of the impact of the context on their work and also the potential that they have to affect this. It's a real two-way relationship, and there's a tremendous amount of power and ability in the social work role to positively affect the context they work in. You know, social work grew out of two traditions, the micro tradition of individual help and the macro tradition of campaigning to change society. And to have integrity, we actually need to engage with both.
Yeah, and it's something that I've thought about quite a lot because of the trade-off and the struggle sometimes about deciding whether to be more engaged with individual practice, you know, doing that direct work with people, or to be more engaged with the social, the kind of macro scale, and to have more influence at the larger scale, you lose that really deep influence that you might have with an individual. And my supervisor has been really helpful, actually, because her stance on this is that any intervention that or activity that ultimately has an impact on people's wellbeing is social work. And if you apply the same values and the same principles, the same sense of purpose to it, and you use the same sort of skills and knowledge. So whether you're working with one person or you're working with a whole community or you're working at a national level, whether you're writing a resource or a court report, whether you're doing a workshop or you're running a family group conference, you're using the same capabilities with the same ethics for the same purpose. So everything we do really is social work intervention, and it's possible to do both the micro and the macro. I think you do need both of them in your life to remain balanced. So I spend quite a lot of time working more at the macro scale, but I still need to go out into people's homes, spend time with an individual social worker working with an individual person to kind of really understand that element of it. But I think it's good to try to see all of it as social work.
I think that's right. You can't divorce the political or even the economic from social work. The social and economic context really influences the decision that society makes about what social work's for.
Yeah, and in that sense, social work is always political, isn't it?
I think it's not
just professional.
You know, and we've got to decide what to invest in. You know, so public concerns and public perceptions do dictate where funding goes. We can't be politically neutral. We need to engage with the decisions that people make that actually affect it. And a lot of those are often the way that we advocate, I think, for people who are not able to advocate for themselves, and the way we keep an eye on social justice and social policy and things that are happening on that national scale. You know, we need to consider the amount of money that people have and how the aims they hold affect the way in which they relate to people who need social work.
Yeah, so when a society feels wealthy, I guess it's more inclined to support marginalised people.
Yep.
And when people see those, the other, as part of their society, they're more inclined to help them. But that kind of sense of scarcity or that sense of exclusion
or competition,
really affects what social work is then empowered to do by the public.
That's right. And that's when I think we've talked before about how social work can have that feel like a social policing role, where we're required to, you know, check people's age, check people's eligibility for benefits, check people's, you know, that they meet the criteria to receive any service and how there can be a real tension.
Yeah, and this is where it becomes really interesting, because on an individual level, doing good social work is always a force for good. But at a social level, who you're empowered to work with can be a really positive inclusionary force, or it can be an exclusionary force. So it can be a force for good or for ill, actually.
Yeah, because it's that idea, isn't it, of the deserving poor and who makes the decision about who deserves it and what exactly they deserve. Yeah, and I think, you know, this is a really relevant conversation, because actually, you know, we live in a time where there is a perception that resources are scarce and that we need to be vigilant on our own behalf.
Yeah.
So for me, it's about how we can keep track of the change perceptions of what society can afford and what it should be like for each person and how fair it should be. And we can think about how our views have changed over time, because, as you say, I think they do ebb and flow. You know, does it relate to our economic status, and how have our views on who society should help, why and how, changed after time? And does that relate to our social status? Has there been
Because we're not neutral agents in this, are we? So where we stand in the economic and social hierarchy will influence us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and because this is, it's so difficult to answer the question of what should a just or a fair society look like, there's been quite a lot of philosophical work around this. And one of the things I found helpful was Rawls' theory of justice, which we have mentioned in a previous podcast. And within that, there's an idea of this veil of ignorance. So the idea is that you don't know where you're going to end up in a society. You could be a beneficiary of all kinds of privileges, or you could be excluded. You could need support, or you could be in a position to offer support. And if you imagine that you don't know what your social status or your ability or your capacity or your characteristics would be, then think about how you would structure society to be fair, no matter where you ended up. And if you try and do it that way, it gives you, I would say, probably one of the best chances of establishing what a fair society might look like. You know, the resources that you'd expect people to put in, the help that you'd expect people to receive. And that gets us away a little bit from our own social and economic bias. And it also helps us to evaluate to some extent whether what we're currently asked to do as social workers is fair or not.
Yeah. And I think that when we think about the places, the situations and the difficulties that people experience that we wouldn't want to end up in, they're the places where actually social work needs to be. Mm-hmm. And we need to find a way to be in those spaces, be given permission to be in those spaces, so that we can be enabling people to thrive. And for that to happen well, it's not just about responding to them in the immediacy right now. It's also about thinking about why did they end up in those situations, what's happening on a societal level that can be changed or challenged to actually help improve those situations in the longer term. So social workers need to act on both that micro and macro level. They need to impact the individual, and they also need to be impacting the structures. And we need to really work with people to help them overcome the structural barriers that they're facing and to develop structural enablers. Social workers often don't get to decide what social work is there to do. Mm. It's a political question. It's based on the values of the citizens who elect and represent their central and local representatives, and they enact out the law and policy and plans. But what we can do definitely is we can engage in the debate.
Yeah,
we can take responsibility for answering queries and reviews and, you know, all the invitations that we get, that come out. We should be really active in answering them and really interested in it. I think that's the thing for me, maintaining that kind of commitment to the societal debate alongside the individual helpfulness that we're offering.
Yeah, so we can engage in the debate in a few different ways. So one of the ways that we can engage is by helping people to better understand the kind of problems that social work is there to address. So why would we ever need social work? What are the structural barriers that mean that some people don't thrive? What are the issues that people face? What are the individual situations that come up, which mean that we need the safety net? And then we can also help people to understand what's likely to work in those situations, both on an individual and a social level. So what will help people directly, but also how can we overcome some of those structural barriers? And we can also help people to understand the likely consequences of particular laws and policies and plans. So we want to present, I think, a professional view based on our experience and expertise and relationship with people going through those situations about what it's like for them and what the evidence says about the impacts and what will help. And we also need to act as a critical friend about the way that that's turned into then plans and policies, or sometimes ignored for plans and policies. And that really includes us being open about the impact of our own role. We need to use evidence and we need to be really clear about our own biases within that, because it is difficult to be neutral. We're coming from a particular place as well as a profession and as individuals within the profession.
And I think for me, it is really about our role in ensuring that people who are experiencing difficulties have a voice and that the voice is heard. And this is really important at a time when, you know, all around Western society, they're saying really clearly that the gap between the people who have things and the people who don't have as many resources is widening and widening. And I really do see social workers as part of the resource that the have-nots, so everyone keeps calling them, have.
Yeah, because the less you have, very often the less social capital you have. As soon as you've got a scrap of privilege, you can build links with people who also have it.
Yeah.
And so your voice gets exponentially kind of increased and amplified. When you have little voice, it's more decreased and more silenced by the fact that you don't have influential friends. So we can develop people's own voice, but we can also act as social capital and create relationships, act as enablers for relationship with people who have got influence.
And really, that's a really big thing for me. And I think that, you know, because failure to thrive in society can be really seen as an individual problem or as a choice, something people choose to do. And as those inequalities increase and experiences become more diverse, the partnership role that allows us to create a louder voice for people at the margins just becomes more and more crucial. And some of the enablers that enable us to do this, I like that, enablers that enable us to do this, sorry, a confidence and optimism, seeing it as part of our role, seeing it as part of being professional, being really open about power.
Yeah.
And being prepared to debate and discuss. Social workers really need to work actively against discrimination and oppression that affects them but also affects the people that they serve.
Yeah, and any time I think we're talking about how difficult it is to do this work, we should always be thinking how much more difficult it is
to need
a social worker. So we've got a couple of reflective questions. The first one is, how do I work in partnership with people who need social work? So genuinely work with them so that their experiences and voice are, you know, up front and center, that they're really heard, and that they are enabled to overcome barriers themselves. And how do I use evidence to argue for social work that's socially just? What is my evidence for my beliefs around justice? What's my evidence for the things that I want to do? You know, how do I know that those will really benefit people individually but also build a better society?
They're good questions, Jerry.
Yeah, and I don't begin to have answers to them, actually, but we'll go on to talk about that.
Yeah, okay, let's go on to talk about that.